Each of our readings today speaks of life and death, and moreover, life after death. It's as though we are being prepared for the weeks to come, as though we were given a taste of the Easter acclamation. We hear from the prophet Ezekiel the words that will be later echoed by Jesus, words about dry bones, lifeless bones. These dry, lifeless bones are used to describe God's people. God's people have become dry and lifeless. They are dead to God, or at least as good as dead, because they've fallen out of relationship with God. But God has not fallen out of relationship with them. God alone can bring new life to these dry, lifeless bones. God can cause new life to come into that which was lifeless. All is not lost when God is involved. When God is involved, there is hope, even in situations that seem otherwise hopeless. Paul, in his epistle to the Romans, speaks of life and death in terms of spirit and flesh. He's not quite as metaphorical or analogical as Ezekiel. He speaks in words that the good people of Rome would hear and would understand. He speaks in tones very much in keeping with the philosophy of Plato. Flesh is bad, death. Spirit is good, life. He isn't quite that black and white, but he does equate a focus on flesh as death and a focus on spirit as life. He calls us to broader thinking. Don't just focus on what is here and now, on what we can imagine in our flesh. Think bigger. Be more broad. Don't limit the Spirit of God to earthly imagination. God is bigger than anything our flesh can imagine. And because we are God's people, the possibilities for us cannot be contained in our earthly, fleshly understanding. In our reading from the Gospel of John, life and death are very concrete, not metaphoric, not analogy, not philosophical, but literally, physically, life and death, or better, death and life. And because it's another long and involved reading, much is in this story, a story that centers on the events surrounding Lazarus and his death. And much is revealed about those involved. In the story, we have Martha and Mary, or in the order here, Mary and Martha. We remember these sisters from a dinner in Luke's gospel at their home, where Martha was chided by Jesus for being worried and distracted by many things, and Mary was held up as an example of one who has the right focus. Now we see another side of Martha and a fuller picture in John's telling of Mary. Mary, in John's memory, is the woman who poured expensive oil at the feet of Jesus. True to form, Mary go to any length to show her love for Jesus. Martha, in John's gospel, fares a little better than she does in Luke. She's the one who, even before her brother has been raised from the dead, proclaims Jesus as the Messiah. Thomas, too, fares well in this story, at least more favorably than he has throughout history since the resurrection, as has been known as Doubting Thomas. In this story, there is no doubt in Thomas. Jesus tells the disciples they're going back to Judea, the place where he has just been attempted to be stoned. And while the rest might have been hanging back wondering if he had a death wish, Thomas, acknowledging that he must indeed have a death wish, says, "Let's get moving. If he's going to die, we'll go and die with him." And the knowledge that we have in the vantage point of over 2,000 years leads us to want to say, Oh, Thomas, if you only knew what you were saying. He is going to die, but not yet. For now, it's Lazarus, and that's enough. And it's in this reading, in this story, perhaps more than any other, that we get a full sense of Jesus, fully human and fully divine. He's been told that his good friend Lazarus is ill, and his response is, no, he's not going to die. This is all going to lead to God's glory. He doesn't rush to the side of his friend. He waits a couple of days, and this seems odd to everyone. Seems odd to the disciples, and it seems odd to us. Why doesn't he go there? Why isn't he rushing to be with his friend, to heal his friend like he has so many strangers? This response of Jesus makes us uncomfortable. Finally, he decides to go. And that, too, makes folks uncomfortable. The disciples know this move is dangerous, but they also know that it is the right thing to do. Jesus tells them that Lazarus is asleep, and they take him literally, as people so often want to do. Still, they go. News travels to Judea that Jesus is on the way, and Martha gets the report. She meets him as he is journeying and confronts him with her understanding. You could have done something. Why didn't you? And it's in this conversation that she makes her bold statement that he is the Messiah. And this is the piece that we should pay careful attention to, because I think this story in so many ways makes us uncomfortable. Martha comes to Jesus on the road. Her brother is dead. Jesus had gotten the word that Lazarus was ill, and he didn't come in time. He knowingly didn't get there on time. And while we don't have any idea what the tone in Martha's voice was when she met him, we might assume that it's a bit accusatory. And while this would be the perfect time to get into a discussion about pastoral care, I'm not going to go there. At the same time, at this same moment, Martha makes the bold pronouncement that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, who is coming into the world. And she was moved to make this pronouncement before Jesus brought her brother back to life. At this point, she had no reason to think that that was even a possibility. Knowing then the relationship between Jesus and her sister Mary, she goes to get Mary. Through these sisters and the death of their brother, we are given a poignant picture of the humanity of Jesus. He sees the deep sadness of Mary and those who are there to grieve with this family, and he is moved. He too weeps. Jesus, in his full humanity, in his experience of life, just as we experience, was moved and responds quite naturally with tears. He asks where Lazarus has been buried, and then asks that the stone from the grave be removed. Naturally, all the reasons why this is a very bad idea are given, but Jesus will not be swayed. He calls Lazarus out of death into life. In this story, very literally. In Ezekiel, the life given to the dry bones was an analogy. In Paul, it's philosophical in tone. But here it is literal. Jesus, fully human and fully divine, literally brings Lazarus, his friend, back from the dead. And if you've ever lost anyone you love to an untimely death, this story surely has to make you question the motives of God. Didn't Jesus say to the disciples, a paraphrase of what he said to the man born blind just in our reading last week, that this was to reveal the glory of God? Well, then why did he raise Lazarus and not my brother or your spouse or your child or the people that you love? Why doesn't God spare more people? If he had stopped the Holocaust, his glory would have been revealed all the more. I have some very difficult questions I need God to answer for. We all have unhealed wounds. We have unresolved hurts. We have unanswered questions. And we will. God can handle that. God can handle our wounds and our hurts and our unanswered questions because God has got this. If we don't take anything more away from today than that, that is enough. And that is good. God has got this. When we are angry and hurt and frustrated, when very little in our lives seem to make sense, we do our best if we remember that God has got this. That does not remove us from responsibility, but it does give us a different perspective on our very human, very fleshly understanding. And in that belief and understanding, it gives us peace that the world and the flesh cannot give. From the dry bones in the valley, to the flesh versus spirit debate in Rome, to the sisters and all those gathered by the grave of Lazarus in Judea, to this very day and beyond, God has got this. And his glory will be revealed. Amen.